You are about to hear some mind-blowing testimonies from the Muslim world. I mean mind-blowing testimonies. And even from the Hollywood of Italy.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the Line of Fire broadcast today. Michael Brown, as always, thrilled, delighted to be with you, asking for your prayers, the next few days, but in particular the next 48 hours or so, as I am traveling now to India for my 20th ministry trip there, working with our dear friend Yesu Padam, a former untouchable man that was just a lost sinner, atheist, alcoholic, involved in violent communist activity against the rich and powerful of his country, radically saved, close to 40 years ago now, and we have been close friends, co-workers. We'll be pouring into church planters, pastors there who've established well over 1,300 churches in tribal regions and risk their lives regularly for the gospel. So please pray. It's a long haul. Leave from Charlotte, fly to Atlanta, then have a couple-hour layover in Atlanta, then from Atlanta fly to Amsterdam, which is about 8-9-hour flight from Atlanta, meet up with two members of our ministry team and their little baby that they'll be traveling with, meet up with them in Amsterdam, then from Amsterdam to Mumbai to Bombay, which is another 8-9-hour flight, arrive there close to midnight, pick up our luggage, go to a hotel in Mumbai, and then get up a few hours later, fly a few more hours to Vishakhapatnam, where we will minister for about 3.5 days. So it's almost 4 hours, 4 days travel on either side, about 3.5 days of ministry while there, and worth every second of it. So obviously I'm not taking your calls today because I've got some special interviews that I prepared over the weekend for you that I believe will really bless you and thrill your heart. So listen in today, listen in tomorrow. Got another very special broadcast tomorrow. And then, God willing, Thursday and Friday, we'll be coming your way live from India, which is always special. It's the broadcast. To do them live from India means that I broadcast between 12:30 and 2:30 in the morning. So be sure to tune in every day this week. And just pray for grace if I come to mind, just grace on the travels. You know, the time zone's, 10.5 hours different. You've got all the hours travel, just different things like that, challenges to sleep and be productive as well. So thank you for praying and standing with me on this trip. You're about to hear testimonies from dear friends. One of them, I've known the dad since 1987. He has lived in a sacrificial way for the gospel, reaching out to the lost first and foremost as much as anyone I know in the world. Been doing it for close to 40 years now, and we've watched his son, who was just a little boy, watched his son grow up on the mission field, and he's become an actor in Italy, where he's been raised and standing for the gospel in the midst of it. So I had lunch with them on Saturday, and I said, guys, we got to go over to my office, and I want to sit down and record what we've been talking about over lunch. It was that amazing, especially when we get to some of these Muslim world testimonies. They're mind-blowing. And then the door that God's opened for Grant and the message that he has for young people and for career people in media and arts and so on. Really, really important stuff. So call a friend, encourage them to tune in. And listen, we did something Friday in honor of Nancy's birthday. It got such an outrageous response, I decided to extend it another couple of days. So here's the deal. But make sure you take advantage of this today. Here's the number to call, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Buy a hardcover copy of my book, The Real Kosher Jesus. We alone have the hardcover edition. It's $30 with postage. When you buy it, I'll give you another copy totally free, hardcover. And on top of that, I'll give you free my two-hour DVD debate with Rabbi Shmuley, Who is the Real Kosher Jesus?, moderated by Sid Roth. So it's a $75 value for $30. 1-800-278-9978, or go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and click on the online bookstore to take advantage of this special offer.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, welcome back to The Line of Fire broadcast. As you listen to this broadcast today, I am en route to India. So if you're just tuning in, I won't be taking calls today, but we do have some special resource offers we want to bless our listeners with this week as I travel to India, then come your way live from India later in the week. Over the weekend, I got to spend some time with dear friends we've been close with for decades, a father and son who've been on the mission field, well, the son all of his life, dad most of his life. And God's opened some amazing doors for Grant Sloan, his dad, Clark, on the mission field for decades. And Grant basically spent his whole life on the mission field, living little tents, trailers, all kinds of makeshift places as he and his family traveled around the country with a missions team through Italy and Europe, preaching the gospel. And Grant, how old are you now?
I'm 42.
42 years old. So how many years have you been on the mission field, so to say?
Since I was five.
Since you were five, right. So you basically grew up as a missionary. How was it? It's hard for people to understand how your team has lived. But when I would go there just for a week, it wore me out. It was challenging, the lifestyle, the communal lifestyle, the basically outhouses. You know, here's the truck with the shower in it. Here's where the menus
are. Well, to have people understand, it's just like a circus without animals.
Okay.
That's pretty much it. They call it sometimes the circus of God. You know?
Got it. Right. Almost looked like gypsies,
oh, yeah.
Vagabonds,
oh, yeah.
Kind of. Okay. So you grew up with that. How was that growing up in that environment?
Well, when you grow up into it, that's normal for you. You think that's life. I thought everybody should be doing that. I used to think that kids that lived in houses, I felt bad for them. I thought, man, they're closing those four walls. You know, they're not free. I felt like privileged.
Really? All right. Now God's opened some amazing doors for you in Italy these
yes.
many years. Of course, you grew up fluent in Italian. You still have a heart for souls, missions, but God opened some doors for you in what would be non-traditional missionary ways.
Yeah, that's you can put it that way.
So what's happened? What kind of doors?
Well, I'm an actor, and I've been doing it for some time now, and I just see how God has really been giving me opportunities. My prayer is always this: Lord, until you want me in this business, open the jobs. When you don't want it no more, just stop the jobs. That's simple, and it's just been getting better and better.
So are you known like as a TV personality, or if people know your face in Italy?
It happens from time to time. When you're like on air, people recognize you in that moment, and the moment you're not on air, they forget you pretty fast.
Gotcha. But you've been on, wasn't it like a game show or something you're on?
I've hosted game shows, I've hosted different traveling shows, whatever, like that, yeah.
And then done acting in movies and so on?
In the last years, I've been doing more acting, yes.
All right, but basically, acting is a pretty worldly profession. Most of the roles are pretty worldly. It's common. You got profanity, you got nudity and sex scenes.
That's what people want. So you got to give the sheep what the sheep want. You know, that's how they call mass of people in Italy, le pecore, sheep. But thank God I tried to be a positive influence in this horrible darkness, whatever you want to call it, atmosphere, because I feel like we need to be a light to the world. And if a light is shining amongst many light, how can you shine bright? You can shine if you're in the darkness.
All right, so you've determined, though, in your own life, you're going to live in purity, and what if you had some blockbuster role that they offered you, and it required nudity and profanity? Would that be another way that maybe through the back door, being like the world, you could win the world, or is that a compromise of the gospel?
Totally a compromise for me. I don't know if it's my sensible heart or the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it. But if I get a role which is not pleasing to God, I lose my sleep at night. I can't even sleep. It's happened before, and it just torments me.
All right, so you've drawn a line then in the sand and told your agent certain roles you won't take.
Oh, for sure.
All right, so like nudity, profanity,
yes.
Taking God's name in vain, you wouldn't take that.
I mean, I'll do a role of a bad guy or whatever it takes,
yeah.
But I will never blaspheme or do any nudity sex scenes.
Right, so you might be a bank robber or
yeah,
something
I'll
like that.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Right.
I would like that.
Understand. And then you have given your testimony, though, on national TV
yes,
in Italy.
Yeah, well, what happened was they knew I'm a Christian in the TV world, and I was witnessing at a dinner one night to a lady, and she was very touched by my testimony, and she hosts like a kind of like your Judge Judy show
yeah.
called Forum, which they can watch it online. It's still online,
uh-huh.
And it's called Forum, and they had me come on national TV and give my testimony totally, they gave me, they say, carta bianca, which means white paper. I got to say what I wanted on live TV, which was over 3.5 million people watched it that day.
So really?
It was pretty much for Italy.
And Italy, even though it's a Catholic nation, it's not a Christian nation.
90% Catholic, yes.
90% Catholic, but what percent truly born again in the country?
They say less than 1%.
Yeah. So recently something happened that I wanted to share with our listeners. Young people listening, those that are called into arts, those that are called into professions that normally would require some level of compromise, moms and dads in the workplace, preachers, teachers that are pressured to compromise, I want you to hear this story. This is real life. This just happened with Grant Sloan. You were offered a job.
This happened back in June. Usually we get our jobs before the summer because that's when you shoot because of the good climate, you know, good lighting from the sun, whatever, and so you're on location. If you don't get a job by June, you usually don't work the whole summer. So there was no jobs coming in. We're at the end of May, and my agent finally found a really good role for me to play in a horror movie, which I had to play a corrupt American politician. And he was a pretty evil guy, which people didn't know about. He looked good on the outside. And one of the things he had to do was kill babies while they were small because he thought he was doing God a favor by sending their souls to heaven before they became old and evil. And in the script, when I got it, I was already kind of feeling pretty bad to do a horror film, but I thought, you know, no jobs coming in. The director was a very known name.
You're feeling the same pressure that everybody else is going to feel, and the same, maybe I can rationalize this, I'm just acting anyway,
exactly.
It's not really who
I'm doing
I am.
A role.
Right.
And so I started reading the script, and I had to blaspheme God's name, the GD word, twice. And one time it wasn't so loud, but one time I bring my fist to the sky, and I had to scream this out in a moment of frustration. Well, I got on the phone and called my agent and said, you know, I don't do nudity or blaspheme. Why did you even send me the script in the first place? Well, of course, he's not a Christian man. He makes 20%, by the way, of anything I make.
Wow.
He says, Grant, no jobs are coming in. This is what happened. You should feel honored that this guy even wanted to consider you because of his good, you know, big producer, big director. And I said, well, I can't do it. Well, let me talk to the producer and I see if I can have to say these two words and I'll still do the film. I was still wanting to do the film, don't get me wrong,
right. But
not say these bad words, you know. So I call him, he gives me his personal phone number, and the guy right away was honored to talk to me. He was happy that he gave me the role, and, you know, I think he kind of wanted me to ask him almost thank you or lick, we say, his behind because he gave me the part, you know. Well, I just said, look, I'm very honored, thank you, but I cannot say this and this. And right away he got angry at me on the phone. He started saying, oh, you're acting like those are arrogant Americans and you want to even write the film. That's the writer's job. You're just an actor. You're playing somebody. It has nothing to do with who you are. Because I said, look, it contradicts my faith. And right away he got super mad and I lost a job over a telephone call. Well, he calls right away my agent, and my agent calls me back all upset with me. He said, Grant, why again did you talk about your faith even before we signed the contracts? And, you know, there's going to be no more jobs. It's over. We're already in the middle, going towards the middle of June. You know, I can't believe he did this. And I could almost scare that he was going to drop me as an agent, you know. And I felt really, really down. So I left and I went to my dad's camp, which they were in Tuscany about.
So the missions camp where the missions team lives and goes from city to city.
Yeah, they're about 2 hours from Rome. And I was feeling pretty bound, you know, down and not too happy about the whole situation. Well, a lady that's been on the camp for a long time named Ginger, she's been there almost 35 years. She knows me as a child. She's like an aunt to me. She says, Grant, what's wrong? What are you going through? And I just said, in my mind, I thought she couldn't understand what I'm really going through. I said, you know, I had this movie I had to do, but I had a cuss, and so I lost the part, and, you know, I'm pretty down about it. It was going to be a kind of big deal. And she looked at me and took a real stand. She said, well, Grant, you know, when not like compromise, but she said, when you stand up for Christ, he stands up for you, something like that, you know. I was like, well, nice little Christian, you know, slogan.
Yeah, nice for you to say, but I'm nice, in the real world.
Exactly,
here.
You know, I understand she's in the little camp life, the kind of, I say, the bubble, you know, the missionary lifestyle. And I walked away still feeling pretty bad. The exact next day, I got this call for a much better role in a film. Main character, it's like totally, my agent called me just freaking out that they wanted to meet me, and this was even before I even did the part. And he said, if we would have only signed the contract the day before, we could not have this.
And this role now, you showed me the trailer on YouTube, this role is going to start as what could be a blockbuster movie. There's tremendous interest already in it in Europe,
yeah.
And even in America. And then it's going to go into a TV series.
13 series, yeah.
With the potential of repeating. And basically, you will be the face of a longtime comic book character. So like a Spider-Man kind of guy.
Yeah, it's been for 50 years, and this year they're making it. So that's kind of like celebration of the 50 years of this comic.
And this guy's like fighting against evil.
Yeah, well, he steals from the rich and gives to the poor, right. Kind of like a modern Robin Hood, you can say.
Got it. So I mean, that's the role, that's the situation, and you're literally the face, because otherwise he's seen in a mask.
I'm the mask, yeah.
Right, so your face
when he puts on a mask, it becomes me.
Got it, right. So this is the face they're going to see in all of these different situations.
Yeah.
All right, I've got to jump in on this interview right now with Grant Sloan. We will get to the rest of the story when we come back, and Grant has an important word of exhortation and encouragement for you as well.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown here. Thank you again for joining us on The Line of Fire broadcast. If you're just tuning in, I am currently en route to India for my 20th trip there. It's about 37 hours of travel before we arrive at our destination. So please be praying for me and two members of our ministry team that'll be traveling with us as well with their little baby. So keep us in prayer. I'm in the midst of an interview with Grant Sloan, and he's talking about as he honored the Lord and could not take a role in Italy. He's raised on the mission field. His testimony is known by many in the media and in Italy. He could not take a role in a major picture. It would have been the most major role he ever had, but he would have had to shake his fist against God in the film and blaspheme God's name. He said he couldn't do it. He was reviled by his producer, his agent for not doing it, the movie producer for not doing it. And it ends up that as he honored the Lord, an amazing door of opportunity opened up for him. So back to my interview with Grant Sloan.
Right, so here you honor the Lord and you say, look, I can't do this, I can't compromise. That affects your income, that affects the relationship with the agent, that affects potential open doors. But the bottom line is, God opens doors, and literally, I mean, your face.
I mean, we say this story now and it sounds all nice, and it's nice to even say it here on live radio. But the reality, when I was living the moment, it didn't seem like there would be this out. I felt like it was like I should have got the other film, but maybe the guy should have took off those bad words. I felt like God was almost turning his back on me then. I didn't know he had something much better for me the next day.
So understand? It wouldn't be a test unless it was a test. In other words, if you could have known in advance, just say no to this and a bigger door will open, that's easy.
Very, exactly.
But when
exactly.
You said no to it, your world collapsed a little bit.
Yeah, big time, yeah.
And you know the power of boycott. Mm-hmm. You know you get your bad name and they're just not going to deal with
it. Especially when you have your agent very mad at you. It's not really good in my business.
Got it. Now, Grant, one other thing. You have been in the midst of, you said, a dark world. There's a lot of things that believers would frown on or just kind of normal life, mm-hmm. You know, the celebration of immorality, the celebration of worldliness, the celebration of homosexuality, the celebration of sometimes anti-God values, down the list. And you're also around a lot of rich and famous people. Mm-hmm. What's going on in their lives privately? Do you find these people open to the gospel?
I really do find them very open because they're all looking for an answer. And I just see that God gives me opportunities to just share the hope there is in Jesus Christ. When they ask me, what are you in Italy, because everybody's, you know, a lot are Catholic, I never say I'm an evangelical, because that's what they call Christians in Italy. I say I'm a man in love with Jesus. And that leaves a door open for them to, they know in their hearts they should be loving Jesus, because the Catholics teach them to love Jesus, but they know mm-hmm. they're not loving how they should.
Right, because it's just a religious exercise for most of them.
And so I like to leave the opportunity just to say, look, I'm a man in love with Jesus. That's it. And that's what keeps that open door. And I see such a hunger and such a need, because they see, like, I have something they don't have, and they want to understand what it is.
So in other words, they've kind of been to the top of the mountain and realized there's still something missing.
Because I believe the devil lies in people's hearts that never really made it to become rich or famous, thinking in the back of their mind, oh, if you ever win that lottery ticket or you ever do make it rich, you will be happy. But see, these people have got there and they see that there's nothing there. Sometimes it's even worse there than before when they're at the bottom. Because you don't know who's your friends, who really loves you for who you are. You can fulfill your heart with all the desires and all the things of this world, but you see, you're just more empty. You're more thirsty. I heard a phrase, one liner this morning I liked. This guy said, lust. It's like the more you do it, the more you want, and the more you think you need. It's like trying to drench your thirst, be putting salt in your mouth.
Yeah.
But the more you're putting it in your mouth, the more you're needing to drink.
Exactly.
And that's the same thing the devil has, making people think, hey, the more sex or the more booze or the bigger high, the better you'll be. But we know the end results.
Yeah, and the way it works out, really, when you get all these things, that's when you realize the flesh doesn't satisfy. And you end up with higher rates of divorce, more alcohol, more drugs, more broken relationship, more
depression.
Suicide. Yeah.
A lot of depression.
That's what I was going to get to.
That's more amazing.
So the depression is there because they've got everything they want and it doesn't satisfy.
Well, it hurts me sometimes. They invite me to these amazing dinners, and I want them to see Christ in me. You know, that's my heart's desire. And they always think it's some positive energy I have, or I come around them and they think good things happen to them, that I bring good luck. I have people come and touch me, because the Italians are very traditional, because they think I bring, they say, buona fortuna, good luck. And I try to say, it's not about me. It's about who Christ is in me. That's what I want you to have. You can taste it. You can try this too. It's amazing. And they think it's some big research or some long journey. And I believe even the devil keeps that in their mind, like it's so difficult to find Christ when it's already there. They just have to receive it, you know?
So, Grant, let me ask you an honest question. God's opened these doors. You're among often the rich and famous, and you could be on a beautiful yacht with a beautiful, amazing dinner, and, you know, your name is known in certain circles. Now your face is going to be better known than it ever has. What if the Lord said, okay, that season's over. I want you to go back with the team. I want you to live in the camp. I want you to you know, live communally with people and get on the streets and preach Jesus. How would you feel about that?
No, I would take it in a heartbeat, because I really realize in life it's not where you are, it's not what you have, it's what you are inside. And I'm happy anywhere. Some days I'm sleeping in a 5-star hotel. Some days I'm sleeping on a train in Bombay, India. It doesn't change me, and it's true. It's how it is. I don't know if it's because of the way I was raised, but the things around me or the things I have, it's never influenced me. Because you can be happy inside and be in any situation or anywhere, and you're happy. Or you can be sad inside and have any situation, be anywhere, and still be sad.
Yeah.
So it's really, it's the inner man. That's what it all boils down to.
Well, that was my interview with Grant Sloan. Coming up next, my interview with Clark, Grant's dad. If you're not able to listen to it live, please go to the website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. And trust me, this is some of the most mind-boggling stuff you've ever heard. Testimonies from the Muslim world. And I pray that you were blessed to hear Grant's story, Grant's testimony, and that it gives you courage wherever God has positioned you to stand up for what is right and to stand up for what is true and to honor the Lord. Okay, if you didn't hear the special resource offer, it was kind of an outrageous one. Really, honestly, no hype, very close to our costs and everything involved. But I just decided, let's do it. It was Friday. It was Nancy's birthday. I figured, let's just do something a little unusual. So here's the special resource offer. Buy a copy of The Real Kosher Jesus, the hardcover version. Our ministry is the only one that has that. It's $30 plus postage. When you do, we'll give you free a second copy of the hardcover. We've never done this before. Second copy of the hardcover free, plus the 2-hour DVD debate moderated by Sid Roth, Who is the Real Kosher Jesus? That's another $20 value. It's a $75 value total, $30 postage paid. Great opportunity to take advantage of this for holiday gifts. If you can help with extra gifts, awesome. But take advantage of this. Call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go to our online bookstore, askdrbrown.org. Just click on the online bookstore for the special offer. And remember, keep me in prayer as I travel to India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, welcome to The Line of Fire. It is a special broadcast today. I am en route to India, coveting your prayers, hoping to be broadcasting live from India later in the week. But we've got a special broadcast today and tomorrow. The last half hour, I interviewed Grant Sloan. Growing up on the mission field in Italy, God opened the door for him to be an actor there. His testimony is known in the nation. He shared some of his story last half hour. If you missed it, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and click on The Line of Fire. Now, his dad, Clark, we've known each other for many, many years. Clark has been on the front lines of the mission field, living sacrificially. I can't underscore how deeply he's lived sacrificially for the gospel, for souls. And there are amazing things happening in the Muslim world. So sit back, enjoy this incredible interview with Clark Sloan. And we begin by talking about how it is he ended up on the mission field in the first place. And Clark, we've been friends now since 1987.
Right.
1987. And I'm just going to need you to speak up. I know you're normally soft-spoken.
Okay.
But I'm going to need you to speak up as we're talking. And friends, I'm not taking calls. I'd love to take calls today, except as you're listening to this, I am literally on my way to India. And later in the week, God willing, we'll be coming your way live from India. But Clark, what year did you leave for the mission field?
1973.
And were you just kind of like backpacking your way through Europe? Were you thinking, I'm going to be on the mission field for the next 40 years?
No, I had not even a thought. I was a career man in the bank.
All right. So you left that, you just went to Europe to preach for a little while?
No. I went to Europe with a one-way ticket and never thought I'd ever be back to the States.
Ah, so you were not a career man in the States. You were a career man on the mission field. Never had a thought you'd come back. How did you get such a notion as a new believer that you're just going on the mission field for life?
Well, my wife called me in my office one day in the bank and said, the Lord gave me a scripture, and it was the same scripture that the Lord had given me in Matthew about selling everything you have and providing for yourselves a bag that wax not old in heaven. And she asked me, what do you think it means? And I said, well, I think it means we need to do what it says. And that was the beginning of our life serving the Lord as missionaries.
So, not that this makes you holy or saintly, but it's been now like 40 years without having a normal home like people would have.
Absolutely.
You have a lot of regrets over that you haven't had as much treasure in the world as others?
I've never repented of a day.
All right. And look, I'm envious of Clark. He knows it, of the treasure he's going to get in heaven and the treasure he already has here of souls that have come to the kingdom. Italy has been your base. When I asked you once how many countries you've been to, you said you lost track of how many times you've been around the world. But one of the countries that you went to years ago was Afghanistan.
Yes.
1983,
yes.
All right. How many believers were there, according to what you were told, in 1983?
Zero. Not one believer.
It's in this Muslim country, no one knew of a single born-again Christian.
Absolutely.
And in Italy, you've had an influx of Muslims. You're telling me now it's about 2 million. And you've been preaching to Muslims as well through the years. In years past, did you see a lot of fruit among the Muslims?
Absolutely none.
No fruit.
But with many programs that failed, trying to reach out to them.
All right, so you keep going for it. And then in Italy, you've got a big tent that you travel with. You set up evangelistic meetings. You may go to a city for like 3 months where you get a permit with the team and maybe 100 team members, men, women, and children. You set up, I've had the privilege of being with the team many times over the years. You've got this big tent. You can have night meetings. You worship and preach. But then during the day, you're on the streets doing evangelism, reaching out. The tent seats a couple thousand people, right?
3,000 people.
3,000. And over the years, have you ever had the tent with less than 100 people in it?
The world's largest gospel tent with the world's smallest gospel crowds.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
And you see that, I mean, we're laughing here. But it's tough. I mean, sometimes it's cold and you're living in those conditions in the middle of the night. You got to use the outhouse and the field. You know, maybe it's been raining and it's a muddy field. And you guys have lived like that. You come out of the mud into the mud, out of the cold into the cold, dirt and dust. And you've lived like that for years. So you've preached then. Your team's been on the streets in a city maybe for months and tiny crowds.
Very small.
How come you've stayed with it, man?
Because you know what you know in your heart that you should be there. And it's just that the motivates you. It's like plowing a field. You don't look what you have to do. You don't look what you've done. You just look ahead at cutting the next row.
And, Clark, over the years, there have been people that came in under the tent or you met on the streets, drug addicts, that are now leading pastors in the country.
Absolutely. We have seen a lot of fruit with people that have gotten hold of God and become responsible, influencing the nation, and a number who have went into other parts of the world and did great works for God.
But you hadn't seen a breakthrough with Muslims, and then something started happening recently. This is eyewitness stuff that you're seeing to the point that you turned your tent over recently to Muslims for an ex-Muslim conference?
Yes. It all started a couple of years ago when the doors started slipping open. Two young people from Iran that were backpacking through Europe got saved in our tent, and they had these radical conversions where they were going out on the streets with our teams, and they would always bring back other Muslim people, which Muslims attract Muslims when they're out of their country. And what would happen is we would show them the film Jesus in their language and give them a meal. And more than not, by that evening, had gotten saved.
Now, you're talking about real conversions.
Absolutely.
What's one of the first things they want to do once they get saved?
They want to get baptized.
So are they, and when they get baptized, there's no turning back.
It's that in their mind, they're killing themselves. It's death.
So they are. Once you take this stand, there's no turning back, and you may well die for it.
Absolutely.
Tell us about this Palestinian man, Muslim, who was being prepared for suicide bombing mission. Tell us the story, because you know him firsthand.
This man was preparing himself to go into Israel and blow himself up. He had been instructed how to strap himself in a bomb belt. And in the night, he received a dream. Jesus came to him and told him not to blow himself up and to follow him. He went to his mullah, and the mullah told him it was
not Jesus. So in case a couple of listeners may not know, mullah is the Muslim leader, the Muslim cleric. So he goes to his Muslim leader, and what does the Muslim leader tell him?
Tells him that that is the devil, because he's about ready to bring such glory to God that the devil has come to persuade him not to do it.
All right, then what happens?
Then he goes home and he has the dream again. But the problem was he felt peace and he felt love. He had never felt that before. And so he goes back to his mullah, and the mullah says, "You are really targeted by the devil. This is the devil." And he goes back home. He has the dream again. He has the dream four times.
All right, so four nights, Jesus appearing to him, Jesus telling him not to do it. His Muslim leader is telling him, "You are so marked by God that the devil himself is appearing to you to deceive you." So, okay, he's feeling peace during this dream. He's feeling love. This is Jesus telling him, "Don't blow yourself up," but he's confused and frustrated. So what does he do?
He's so confused after the fourth time, he straps himself up, sets the bomb, and says, "If this is Jesus, it won't go off." He presses the button, it didn't go off. He felt like, "Well, maybe I goofed up." He resets it, it doesn't go off. He does that four times.
At that point, he realizes.
He takes off the vest. And now he's preaching the gospel to refugee camps all over Europe and also back in Palestine.
All right, and as he's doing this, there is a place in a public setting for debate and dialogue. I debate rabbis. I have friends that debate Muslim leaders. Muslims are into apologetics, too. They want to argue their faith. There's a place for that. But your average person on the street, if you said to him, look, I don't know how to debate the Quran, I don't know how to debate Islam, what would this brother tell them?
He would say, don't debate. Just show the love of Christ.
And how does this guy show the love of Christ? What does he do?
One thing, he shows interest in listening to what they have to say. And then he literally invites him to eat, invites him to his home. He offers to help him in a physical way.
And you told me that he actually goes with homeless people in a sleeping bag and sleeps there with them?
He actually goes, the refugees, many of them, they live in the train stations. And he goes with his sleeping bag and sleeps in the train station with them, not for just a few days, but for weeks.
Really? And he's seeing fruit?
He's seen an incredible amount of fruit.
And we hear the reports about people coming to faith in Iran, but you're running into now a lot of Iranian ex-Muslims.
Absolutely.
And what kind of numbers do they report in terms of people coming to faith?
I was told that not tens of thousands, but hundreds of thousands of people have come to the Lord in the last few years, and it is growing incredibly to a point where even in the government, there's some undercover born-again believers now. And one brother told me he believed, he heard through another believer that Ahmadinejad himself had heard the gospel.
Really? Look, I've heard these reports from Iranian believers. I've read them for years and years. At a certain point, this it'd be impossible to hide this, just like the growth of the gospel in China. But even these reports, people have brought the gospel to Ahmadinejad. All right. And friends, if you're listening, I'm not taking calls. I'm sitting with a dear friend, a wonderful brother who's laid his life down for the gospel over the years, Clark Sloan. Heard an amazing testimony from his son, Grant. I'm not taking calls because I'm on my way to India, but God willing, later in the week, we'll be with you live from India. And Clark's been on the mission field doing it, the real deal. And, you know, one thing I know about you, Clark, you're not into hype. You would not be a good American TV preacher.
I would be a very unsuccessful fundraiser or TV preacher.
And yet, the stories you have are the most remarkable stories I've ever heard in my life. And you're not an exaggerator. You don't like exaggeration either.
Well, I'd try not to.
Yeah. And look, I've been involved in some of the stories, so I know they're not exaggerated. All right. You told me over lunch one of the most amazing stories about a man in Afghanistan. Now, again, in 83, when you were there, no one knew of any believers, maybe hidden believers, but no one was aware that you talked to believers in the country. Now they're talking about ex-Muslims, as many as 6,000 that are known. And of course, numbers could be much higher. Oh, okay. What happened with this Taliban guy, a guy who'd been involved in violent acts, blood on his hands, involved in murderous terrorist acts? What happened to this guy, one of the most amazing stories?
Well, a month before I left Italy, this year we were doing these prayer meetings with these Muslims, ex-Muslims, and a young man, I told him I was from America, he started weeping and he hugged me, and he told me a story that right now the hairs on my arms stand up. He also testified in our tent. He was a Taliban terrorist in the mountains of Afghanistan, living with a band of others, and they would go down and attack villages and American installations. And he was an assassin. And one night, in his room, a man walked into his room and sat at the foot of his bed. Immediately when he woke up, the Bible, that he had never heard of the Bible before, he had never seen a church or knew anything about Christianity. He said the Word of God started going into his body miraculously. He didn't know what was happening. And then this man started sharing how Jesus was the truth.
So it's a man, he just sees a man has walked into his room and is speaking to him. As he's speaking, he feels like what he now learns later is scripture. going into him, and he doesn't know anything about the Bible. He knows about Jesus because he's a Muslim.
Right.
And Muslims have certain beliefs about Jesus. So this man starts telling him, though, that Jesus is the truth.
All right, I've got to jump back in and tell you that we'll come back with the rest of this story. God doing amazing things in the Muslim world. If you just tuned in, I'm on my way to India. This is a broadcast that I recorded on Saturday. And look, I've been appealing to God for family members that don't know the Lord, saying, Lord, if you're saving these Muslims around the world like this, save my family members that don't know the Lord. I've been praying for religious Jews. Lord, if you're doing this for Muslims, do this for religious Jewish people as well. All right. Back with one more segment and the conclusion to this amazing story right here on the Line of Fire.
Send it, Lord. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Michael Brown, welcome back to the Line of Fire broadcast. If you just tuned in, I'm in the midst of an interview with my missionary friend, Clark Sloan. He's telling the incredible story of what happened to a Muslim man, a Taliban assassin, to whom Jesus appeared. Jesus walked into his room where he was, began to speak to him, his tent wherever he was, begins to speak to him about Jesus in the third person. And then, Clark will take it from there.
He explains to him in a third-person way about the truth, and then he tells the man, I am Jesus, and he vanishes.
All right, so this guy, Taliban, terrorist, assassin, young man?
Young
man. Okay, he has this experience. What now takes place? And you spoke to this man, told you his story face-to-face.
He's hugging on me and crying.
And what is his, was his face bruised or anything, or...
Yes, he had been, they tried to kill him twice when I was there.
All right, so does he think now, okay, I've got to process this, or maybe this is a common theme that many others believe? What's going through his mind?
Well, he rushes to his friends because he thought in that moment he was the first person that had ever had this revelation of Christ and the truth.
So he now announces it thinking maybe they're all going to believe?
He goes to them thinking they will all immediately become followers of Jesus. They tried to kill him immediately.
All right, so he's got to get out of Afghanistan.
He flees Afghanistan and goes to Iran. They tried to kill him in Iran, and he fled and went to the refugee camp in Italy where they tried to kill him, and that's after when I met him.
And was he depressed and fearful because they were trying to kill him?
Absolutely not. Well, he was so full of joy and humility and love. Whenever he talked about Christ, he would break down and cry like a baby.
And what's his goal? What does he want to do next?
His goal is to get back to Afghanistan and share this truth as fast as he can.
Incredible. And people, now you're hearing more and more accounts just like this.
Absolutely.
And you can't deny the reality because the people are getting radically born again.
Radically. One after another.
And, you know, Clark, you were saying you sowed all these years, sowed, you know, reached out to Muslims, among others you reached out to, saw literally no fruit. Now, suddenly, your tent, your camp is being given over to ex-Muslims. You've got ex-Muslims that are on the team. One of the gals heading up the kitchen crew, because you live communally and share meals together, she's from Iran, ex-Muslim. So, I mean, you sowed for years. The reward comes back in different ways. And, Clark, here... We're just sitting here, the two of us, in my office. Right now, as folks are listening, I'm on a plane somewhere. I'm on my way to India. I want you to talk as straight and candid as you can. I know you're not one to condemn other believers or sit in judgment of other believers. We each have to stand before God. But here we are in America. We're getting close to the Christmas season. We remain, even in a rough economy, a very materialistic culture. As an American now on the mission field for decades, just talk out of your heart, man. What really matters? It's not a matter of not having things, because you could be poor and spiritually bankrupt. But could you just talk to our listeners for a minute from your heart about what really matters and maybe how we could reprioritize our lives?
What really matters is being in the will of God and walking with Jesus and being a testimony wherever we are. not just with words, but with our life. And that's really preaching the gospel. And I really firmly believe, and I share this always, all you have to do is pray and ask God to give you opportunity with a sincere heart. And during that day, whatever opportunities come, you take them to lift up Christ, and you'll see fruit.
And Clark, you have been through some very challenging times in recent years, enough to crush a man, a tremendous family upheaval, and with that some physical challenges. Isn't it time, man? You've put in your years. Why not just get off the field and kind of lick your wounds? It's been rough. Why are you still out preaching Jesus? Why are you still out on the mission field?
Well, like Bon Jovi says, there'll be plenty of time to rest after I die.
It's that simple.
That's simple.
Should we pity you? Because, come Christmas time, you don't have your own house, and you may not have a lot of money for big presents, and you've been through these family challenges. Should we be feeling sorry for Clark Sloan at this stage of life?
No, do not feel sorry for me. As my son said, we feel sorry for others that have just not had the blessing and the grace of God to be able to do these things.
And as you look back now, 40 years on the mission field, do you regret the decisions that you've made? Do you regret raising your kids on the mission field? And you don't, I imagine you don't have a retirement fund right now or a big pension?
Absolutely not.
And how old are you now, buddy?
I'm 62.
62. And with some recent challenges in the midst of it, any regrets?
I have not one regret in my whole life. I would do it better if I could go back, but I wouldn't change anything.
All right, friends, that is Clark Sloan, dear friend, co-worker, whom I honor in the Lord. We chatted a couple more minutes at the end of the interview, and I told him I envy him because of the treasure he's going to have in heaven, but he was kind enough when I asked to let me know I could stay at his mansion sometimes if he's got a bigger mansion than me. Friends, don't be condemned if you look at your own life and realize you've wasted years. Don't be condemned if you look at your own life and realize that you've been so caught up with the things of this world that you've lost sight of eternity. Instead, say, Lord, here I am. Use me today. Instead, live with a sense of greater urgency that if we've wasted years, that means we've got to make the years we have count all the more. Again, please do pray for me and the ministry team that's going to be traveling with me over to India. We are en route right now, even as I speak, and it's about a 36, 38-hour journey from leaving my home, maybe a little more than that, to we arrive at our destination. So pray for God to really move. We'll be there for about 3.5-4 days and then head back. And God willing, coming your way live Thursday and Friday with a special broadcast I believe will stir your heart tomorrow. And on a very positive, fun note, we did something on Friday and got kind of a crazy response to it. In honor of Nancy's birthday, we came up with one of the most incredible offers we ever have, 60% off. When you buy one copy of The Real Kosher Jesus, the most important book I've written to give to Jewish people, to share the gospel with them, and to open the hearts and minds of believers to who Jesus really is. Hardcover volume, you can only get that through our ministry, $30 including postage. When you buy one, we're giving you a second one free. Correct, giving you a second one free. And on top of that, hardcover, right. And then on top of that, giving you two DVD set of my debate with Rabbi Shmuley, Who is the Real Kosher Jesus, that was moderated by Sid Roth. That you get for free as well. $75 value for $30. But this is the last day, so take advantage of that. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go to our online bookstore, askdrbrown.org. And click on the online bookstore. My bottom line today, make the most of this opportunity that you have to serve God, to live for Him, to bear fruit, to make a difference. And if there are lost people around you, perhaps God has put you there in their midst to be a witness.